This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The fact that people don't have access to food commodities and the scarcity of goods in general will lead to the number of protection risks that will develop. We're talking about early marriage, sexual violence, trafficking, and exploitation.
That's Emmanuel Gignac, the UN Refugee Agency's representative in Niger, on concerns that the political crisis there will develop into a humanitarian catastrophe. Details coming up. Also, Mali's junta is urging armed groups to renew dialogue as the UN peacekeeping force withdraws. And Sudan's army chief is in Egypt today on his first trip abroad since the outbreak of war in April. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The main opposition party, Citizens Coalition for Change, has called for new elections and asked the regional groups like African Union and Southern Africa Development Community, or SADC, to intervene in Zimbabwe's election process. Reporter Kuzai Zinawashi has more from Harare.
There is a lot of uncertainty in Zimbabwe following elections last week that international observers said were marred with widespread intimidation and delays linked to administration challenges. Incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa, with ZANU-PF, was declared the winner. The main opposition, Citizens Coalition for Change, maintains the polls were a sham and were stolen from them. Gift Ostalo Siziva is the deputy spokesperson of the opposition party. He spoke to journalists Tuesday in Harare.
We believe as citizens, as the citizens movement, we believe without doubt that the election on the 23rd of August 2023 does not reflect the true will of the Zimbabwean people. The election was flawed. The entire process was shambolic and illegal. All the stakeholders that have observed this election have condemned the Zimbabwean election, the pre-electoral environment, the election itself, and the post-electoral environment that we are in today. This election failed by all standards to meet the requirements of the law of our country, which is the Electoral Act and the Zimbabwean Constitution read together. It failed to meet the standards as articulated by SADC, the African Union, the European Union, and all the observers that were observing this election.
The CCC says its presidential candidate, Nelson Chamisa, should have won. Some critics of the election say the next course of action will be to approach the courts within 7 days. But Siziva was not clear if that would be high on the CCC's priority list, and says the party is demanding new elections.
We are going to settle for less, none other than a free, fair, credible, and a proper election in our country. Now, the biggest question that faces Zimbabwean society right now is how do we achieve this desired end? How do we, to put it differently, restore legitimacy in our country? Our answer to all Zimbabweans and Africans at large, the solution lies in calling upon our African brothers and those in the region, particularly SADC, the African Union, to help us to facilitate, to mediate, to scaffold, and more importantly, to guarantee a process that will lead our return to legitimacy in the shortest period of time.
ZANU-PF maintains that the party won this election in a free and fair manner. George Charamba, Mnangagwa's spokesperson, told VOA's Zimbabwe service that Mnangagwa will meet with Chamisa if he acknowledges that there is a clear winner of the election already. He said Chamisa needs to engage the head of state as a subject. SADC seems torn on the issue. South Africa and Namibia have sent Mnangagwa congratulatory messages, while other countries in the region have not. This comes against a SADC Observer Mission report that highlighted the irregularities in the just-ended polls. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe in Harare, Zimbabwe.
The Sudanese military commander and head of the interim council that is officially running the country, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, arrived in the Egyptian coastal town of El Alamein yesterday to meet Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. It's his first official trip outside Sudan since the outset of the country's bloody conflict, which began in April. Edward Iranian reports from Cairo.
Sudanese leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan was welcomed as a visiting head of state by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi Monday during Burhan's first trip outside Sudan since he emerged from hiding in or around the capital Khartoum several days ago and made a quick exit to the Red Sea port city of Port Sudan. Burhan insisted at a press conference following his visit with President Sisi that the Sudanese military has no desire to hold on to power unilaterally and that his main goal is to put an end to the four-month-old military conflict as quickly as possible. He says that the Sudanese armed forces is a national army and it has no desire to seize power unilaterally and continue to run the country indefinitely, and that he wants to reassure Sudan's neighbors and the Sudanese people that he is trying to end the war and to complete the democratic transition so the Sudanese people can choose their own leaders through free and fair elections. Despite Burhan's optimistic message, reports from the Sudanese capital and other parts of the country suggested that the conflict may be intensifying. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV showed live video from Khartoum showing plumes of black smoke rising from the industrial sector of the capital's twin city of Omdurman. The French news agency also reported that more than two dozen people were killed in an attack in the city of Niala in Sudan's western Darfur region. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq tells VOA that Egypt's President Sisi met Burhan at the airport in El Alamein to reaffirm that he is Sudan's legitimate leader, despite the conflict. He also stressed that Egypt was trying to end the conflict as quickly as possible to prevent more bloodshed that could provoke an endless series of revenge attacks in the future. Sadiq insisted that Egypt's own national security was at stake because of the Sudanese conflict and that it was imperative to stop the conflict before it gets worse.
Egypt is surrounded by failed states, Libya, Sudan, and Gaza. And so Egypt has a national interest that there is stability and there is a central government in Sudan because it is 1,000 kilometers. So if the central government in Sudan collapses, it means more separatist movement and secessionist groups would emerge that would also have an impact on Egypt. If you ignore Sudan, you will be paying billions of dollars.
Egyptian media reported that General Burhan is planning to visit Saudi Arabia in the hours or days to come, and that his visit could also be followed by another trip to the Gulf. The United Arab Emirates supports Burhan's rival, General Mohammed Hamdan Daglu, and it was not clear if Abu Dhabi was prepared to pressure Daglu into reaching a settlement with Burhan. Some reports say that the UAE is sending arms to Daglu's rapid support forces via the Russian Wagner Group stationed in eastern Libya. Egypt has reportedly drawn up a roadmap leading to a de-escalation of the Sudanese conflict and its eventual end. The plan also reportedly calls for strengthening civilian institutions and rebuilding civilian infrastructure. Washington-based Middle East analyst Paul Sullivan with the Atlantic Council tells VOA that Egypt could greatly benefit from a stable and prospering Sudan, and that many of the several hundred thousand refugees that have poured into the country since the conflict began could go back home. He also notes that Egypt's leverage in the Nile River water struggle with Ethiopia could improve if Egypt is a big player in stabilizing Sudan. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Mali's junta is urging armed groups in the north to renew dialogue and an ailing peace deal amid fears of fresh hostilities after the UN peacekeeping force withdraws. According to the French news agency AFP, the minister in charge of the 2015 Algiers Agreement, Colonel Major Ismail Ouagou, said he wanted to invite the signatories to return to the negotiating table. He said the government remains committed to the agreement, as well as to the ceasefire reached the previous year with an alliance of Tuareg-dominated independent and autonomous groups. The UN peacekeeping mission has until December 31st to exit Mali after a decade of struggling to stabilize the country's security environment amid separatist and jihadist rebellions. Libya's foreign minister, Najla al-Mangoush, has been dismissed after she met her Israeli counterpart in Italy last week. The home of Libya's Prime Minister Abdul Hamid Dbeibah was reportedly a target for angry protesters yesterday during protests triggered by reports about the meeting. Dbeibah denied he knew about it and ordered an investigation after Israel's foreign ministry claimed the two met in Italy. Wolfgang Poschtei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi.
Al-Menfi has informed Prime Minister Abdul Hamid Dbeibah and the new High Council of State Chair Mohamed Takala immediately after he returned to Tripoli. Surprisingly, there was no public reaction, neither from Dbeibah nor from Takala. One could say neither Dbeibah nor Takala have a real interest in having elections anytime soon. Dbeibah can live very well with the current situation. He's just stating frequently that he wants election, doing nothing in practice to really facilitate them. And Takala is very close to Dbeibah, so he has probably the same attitude. The Dbeibah clan, the mighty militias, and somehow also the Haftar family can live very well with the current situation. But nevertheless, with regard to a real solution of the crisis, it was certainly not helpful that the Eastern representatives made such an important statement in a unilateral way. However, the UN and the international community will point the finger of blame on Haftar and on Anguilla Saleh for blocking UN mediation attempts. This is not too bad for Dbeibah and Takala.
The head of the Presidential Council, Mohamed Al-Menfi, reviewed in a phone call with the UN envoy, Abdullahi Batili, the outcome of his meeting in Benghazi. And Batili welcomed this coordination and said, "I also reiterated my commitment to support Libyans to work towards an agreement, paving the way for the holding of inclusive and peaceful elections." Do you see real coordination with the UN regarding elections in Libya?
No, not anymore. Al-Menfi tries to have good relations with Batili, but he is not a politically heavyweight. The others, Dbeibah, Anguilla Saleh, former HCS chair Khalid al-Mishri and Khalifa Haftar, are at most times polite to the UNSR, but they don't care about his opinion. Batili unfortunately entirely lost his credibility after he announced his high-level steering panel for Libya in February at the UN Security Council. This panel should have decided about the legal framework and the roadmap to elections, so a quite powerful statement, but he did not follow up on it in any way. Thereafter, he delivered some more strong words and threatened sanctions to spoilers, but nothing happened. So it is to me no surprise that Batili, who had already a very difficult start in Libya, is not taken for serious anymore. This is very unfortunate for the stabilization process in Libya.
Russian Ambassador Aydar Aganin said Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam, and his supporters represent a force on the ground in Libya whose political weight no one can deny. He stressed the need to allow all personalities to participate in the elections. What do you make of Russia's position with regard to Libyan elections?
The Russians are very, very clever in pursuing their interests in Libya. They have important economic interests, mainly in the oil and gas business, but also in the construction area. And they have geostrategic interests which hurt the West. They have ensured a military presence in the central Mediterranean, and even more important, they use Libya as a hub for further Wagner mercenary operations south of the Sahara. They use Badan Air Force Base at the Chouf Oasis and Al-Khadim south of Al-Marj in the Cyrenaica as key logistic bases and refueling transport aircraft for Wagner operations. And their position is to ensure that they can cooperate with whoever is the winner of elections in Libya. They care neither about the International Criminal Court, nor about democracy, nor about military dictators or political Islam, as long as they cooperate with Russia. Consequently, they also have no problem if the current situation continues. Moscow makes business with the Dabeba GNU, mainly with regard to oil, and provides Wagner mercenaries for Haftar. So they are well off either way.
That was Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Cameroon officials say a fifth case of polio was reported in the capital Yaoundé this week, despite the launching of a new polio vaccination campaign in the Central African country and its neighbors. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports health officials are increasing surveillance and encouraging parents, many of whom still resist vaccination programs, to have their children inoculated.
Cameroon's health ministry says that five cases of the type 2 poliovirus variant were discovered in the Central African state's capital, Yaoundé, this week. The Cameroon government says sequencing results indicate the virus belongs to the NIEZAS1 group that circulates in Niger, Chad, Cameroon, and Nigeria. The five cases constitute a national public health emergency given the high risk of the virus spreading very fast in the ongoing rainy season, according to the government. Armand Piki is a pediatrician at Cameroon's health ministry. She says to stop the spread of the disease as soon as possible, the government of Cameroon has increased efforts to vaccinate all children under the age of five.
There are still sporadic cases. That's why even though we are beginning to move towards the injectable form of the vaccines, we still continue to do the oral vaccination, which is helpful and more efficient in protecting children.
Alma said the government is sending caravans to markets and communities to ask civilians to make sure all children are vaccinated. Poliomyelitis is a highly infectious disease that is caused when the poliovirus invades the nervous system of an infected person. The World Health Organization says polio has no cure and can cause paralysis and even death. The outbreak was reported 3 months after the launch of Africa's largest polio vaccination campaign since 2020. Cameroon health officials say they joined the massive inoculation exercise to reach out to children whose parents were refusing to take the children to hospitals for inoculation because of fear of the coronavirus. Chokfes Salom Doula is the permanent secretary of Cameroon's expanded vaccination program. Chokfes says the inoculation exercise launched in May was a combined effort by Cameroon, Chad, the Central African Republic and Niger to immunize a total 21 million children under the age of five. He says before this week's outbreak in Cameroon, 14 type 2 poliovirus infections were detected in sub-Saharan African countries. Chokfe says one case was detected in Niger, 6 confirmed cases were reported in Chad, and 7 more in the Central African Republic since January. Cameroon's health ministry says more than 3 million children in the country have been inoculated against polio since May. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Senegal, many people are talking about the detention and deteriorating health of opposition leader Ousmane Sonko, who has been on hunger strike. Sonko was arrested in late July. He's been charged with fomenting insurrection, criminal association in connection with a terrorist enterprise, and undermining state security for incidents dating back to 2021. In a separate case in June, a court sentenced him to 2 years in prison for morally corrupting a young woman, a conviction that makes him ineligible to run in next year's election. His sentencing in that case sparked clashes that left at least 16 dead. Many of Sonko's supporters say the charges are politically motivated and aimed at keeping him from challenging President Macky Sall in the election. Sonko went on hunger strike in late July and has been hospitalized in intensive care in Dakar. Reporter Alpha Jallo spoke with people in Dakar to get their thoughts on the situation. This man says Sonko has caused problems for the country, but he says if the authorities decide to pardon him, that would be okay because we need only peace in the country. Babukar Dharma is a university student. He thinks if Sonko's health worsens, it could cause problems for Senegal.
You know, Sonko is very tight currently because he's risked to lose his life at the jail. And once that this is happening at the jail, you know, all African people, all Senegalese people, and at the international level, this information will be forwarded. And once that we arrive at the level, I think that, you know, the situation will be very complicated and we must treat it right now before going deep to the situation. Thank you very much.
Fatou Mahamadou Ba, however, has conflicted feelings about Sonko. She says Sonko has caused many problems in this country because of his radical political approach. But now that he is arrested and is in bad shape, the only thing I can offer is to pray for him. This man, however, says Sonko has been wrongly detained, says Osman is a great politician who is bringing in a new system of politics, not only in Senegal, but the entire African continent. And he says President Sall should do his best to release him because Sonko's arrest and detention is politically motivated. The Nigerian army says it has rescued dozens of captives, mostly women and children, held by Islamic extremist rebels in the country's northeastern region, where Islamic extremist violence has raged for years. According to the Associated Press, the army says the 25 hostages were freed during clearance operations in Borno State's Guwaza district. An army spokesman said 14 captives were rescued Saturday in Gobara village, while 11 others were freed on Sunday when troops raided the rebel hideout in Gava village. Both are around 130 kilometers from Borno State's capital, Maiduguri. The spokesman also said that 7 members of a Boko Haram terrorist family surrendered in a separate operation. Boko Haram aims to establish Islamic Sharia law in Nigeria. The UN says at least 35,000 people have been killed and 2.1 million people displaced as a result of the extremist violence which has spread to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.